Hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Hollywood Podcast, covering the latest in film, TV, streaming, and social media. I'm your host, Max Geschwind. Stay tuned for today's episode. Well, I'm so excited to be joined by filmmakers Chris Bowers and Ben Proudfoot, who are Oscar nominated this year for their documentary short, The Last Repair Shop, which showcases a few of the many devoted craftspeople tasked with keeping over 80,000 student instruments in good repair for kids going to the LA public school system. They've previously been nominated for A Concerto is a Conversation, with Ben himself winning in 2022 for directing The Queen of Basketball. Chris is noted for composing the scores for film and TV series, including Green Book, King Richard, The Color Purple, Bridgerton, and Dear White People. Thank you both for taking the time to chat. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, Max.
Yeah, thank you, Max.
So I just want to say, to kick things off on a personal note, as someone who's a product of the LAUSD school system, having gone through it in middle school and in high school, the film resonated so much for me, and I still live by my high school. And you can see even through the posters of the film that it's such a point of pride that I'm sure not just my local high school, but so many high schools throughout the district have experienced over the last several months since the film has been out in the world. So congratulations again, on a personal note.
Where'd you go to high school? What'd you play?
So I went to I wasn't in the school band, or I didn't play, but I went to John Burroughs Middle School.
That's where I went.
Oh, okay. Very cool. Class of 2011. And I went to Fairfax for high school.
Right.
I believe you went to the LACHES, right? How do you, is that Lockus, or how do you do that?
I went to Locks. My dad went to Fairfax.
Very cool. Well, we'd love to start getting to some questions about the film. Chris, as the musician between the two of you, can you share how you came to discover The Warehouse in downtown LA? And how soon after discovering The Warehouse did you realize that this needed to be the subject of your next short?
Yeah, so I found out from Ben. Ben and I were working on A Concerto as a Conversation at the time, and he had received an article from one of our producers, Jeremy Lambert, about The Repair Shop, and kind of brought it up to me as we were together, probably for something concerto related. And he was like, "Oh, do you know about this Repair Shop? And I know you grew up here, and did you go to LAUSD schools?" And so on and so forth. And for me, I was really surprised that I didn't know it existed, but also at the same time, whenever I thought of an instrument being repaired from the school, I assumed it went to the manufacturer, and I assumed it went like somewhere in the middle of the country, or, you know, overseas or something. Like, I didn't think that somebody here was working on it. So in terms of when I felt like it was a story that needed to be told, my initial inclination was my own curiosity for this space that had an impact on me that I didn't know existed, that was a part of this village that created, you know, led the path or helped support my own growth in becoming a musician, that I wanted to kind of just visit that and interact with that. But as soon as I started hearing some of the stories, because Ben had already started interviewing people, I was even more blown away, and going down to the space and seeing what it felt like and talking to them, I think that was really what made me feel like these stories and the way these people are and the nobility of their approach to their craft, I think was what made me feel like that has to be shared and spotlight lifted up.
Yeah. And as was mentioned, you both worked together coming off of A Concerto is a Conversation. So this is your second project working together. How had your partnership evolved once you began on The Last Repair Shop? And I'd imagine there was maybe a shorthand or a more seamless way of the two of you working together that you had developed, since you had developed that history already. Ben, if you want to go ahead and start.
You know, Concerto obviously was a very personal story to Chris. You know, he's in the movie.
Right.
It's about him and his family, etc. And so this project was really an opportunity for us both to kind of step back and think about it. Very personal for Chris. I mean, I'm from Nova Scotia. I did not go to LAUSD. And be more engaged as from a directorial perspective. You know, I initially dove in on the Repair People interviews, and Chris, and actually Brianna, Chris's wife, who's also an executive producer on the film, both pretty immediately said, you have to interview the kids. And that just took the film to a whole different place, reframed the entire thing in terms of what everything was sort of in service for. And the other sort of layer and flavor of the movie that our collaboration unlocked that I don't think I could have done alone is just the musicality of all the different sections and the way that Chris collaborated with Katya and the way that we collaborated with each other in the end credits to really kind of like create something that neither of us could have imagined individually. And so, you know, Chris and I have just become very comfortable with each other, trusting each other when one of us has a conviction, and also just being able to sort of iterate and plus an idea from kind of like a basic inkling of like, maybe there's something to this kind of crazy idea, and like improving it until it's something really great. And, you know, it's sort of easy to have the metaphor of like, you know, a jazz quartet or something like that, where there's an iteration process that we engage in that's very playful, that lacks any kind of ego or judgment, and that sort of greases the wheels for an idea to get better and better.
Yeah. Chris, did you have anything to add to that?
I mean, just that I totally agree. You know, I think it's what makes the relationship feel so beautiful in terms of our collaboration. But it's also, yeah, we're just such good friends. I think that like that's really where it comes from.
Well, it's just funny, like, I don't think there's any other friendship or relationship that I've been asked more about than like never. Like, when do you ever like talk about like your special relationship with your friend? Right. Like it's a very rare situation to talk about it, but you know, as we've had the opportunity to talk about it, like it is a beautiful and really I think it's a very valuable relationship to both of us. And it also has just been a special mutual muse scenario where we've been able to create, you know, a couple of films that we're really proud of that have made an impact in the world. So it is special.
Yeah, for sure. Chris, I wanted to switch gears and talk about your personal experience being educated in the same school district that this film highlights. How did this influence your filmmaking choices and perhaps provide a greater intimacy with the subject matter, since this was, you know, the district that you grew up in yourself?
Maybe in terms of the kids, because I feel like with each of the stories go so deep into their own personal lives that I think that like, you know, that's just a reflection in this beautiful way of what exists here in this city. And my excitement for the fact that, like, as you know, this city, it's interesting talking to people that have a tendency to hate on LA, and like a lot of that is based on how the city is presented, and people that grow up here have a very different relationship with it, a very intimate relationship with it. And I think this film reflects that type of feeling, you know, overall. And then specifically in terms of my experience as a student here, I think that a lot of that was just in my connecting to these kids on that similarity in our histories and our backgrounds and our relationship with this instrument, and like how we came to find these instruments growing up here.
Can you both share what the cooperation was like with LAUSD itself when you started coming on? Was there any reticence or hesitancy at first, or was it pretty seamless from the get-go from the administration and the superintendent and whatnot?
Yeah, so it's interesting. Not a lot of people were aware of the musical instrument repair shop, which we found out quickly, which sort of underlined the importance of this film.
Even internally within the district.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think the superintendent knew about the repair. I mean, you have to remember, right? There are 80,000 employees of LAUSD, like more than 500,000 kids. So there's a lot of people that work for the superintendent. You know, so that he missed the, you know, this group of 10 people is not a surprise to me. But certainly our film made him very much aware of it, and it has since garnered a lot of support and, you know, spotlight on this shop. We went to the city council, the school board meeting, Chris went, and the president of the school board said, "Oh, I thought we cut this program in 1992. I'm so happy you guys are still around. I thought we had killed you off." So there was this idea that it was this sort of forgotten tide pool that had been working magic and nobody really kind of like knew about it. Of course, the arts education department knew all about it and you know, had probably saved it from the fire and all those budget cuts. So at the time, there was a gentleman by the name of Stephen McCarthy that cleared the way and got all the approvals from legal, et cetera, for us to film there. Other arts education administrators, Titus Campos and Dr. Yoon, who both were important in sort of getting us in there. And then, of course, Steve, the supervisor, who helped us convince the repair people to consider filming with us. It's a funny, fate that the four people you meet in the movie, Dana, Steve, Dwayne, and Patty, are simply the only four people who volunteered. Everybody else was not quite sure they wanted to participate. And those are only the four. So I said, well, whatever they have to say, that'll be what the movie is. And of course, each one of them hit home runs. so we were the lucky, you know, beneficiaries of that gift from those four amazing people.
Yeah. Well, that's a perfect segue into my next question. And it's crazy that those were the only four that said yes, because it definitely seems like those four reflected the diversity of the student body itself that the district serves, whether it's, you know, the repairman who had to come to terms with their sexuality at a time when it wasn't the easiest to do so, or a Mexican immigrant, or a former country musician, or an Armenian refugee. I mean, this seemed like the perfect four that I would assume you as the filmmaker sort of handpicked as the ones to represent the many repair workers. But yeah, could you talk a little bit about finding these four and having them serve as the representatives for the work that the warehouse does?
Yeah, I can talk a bit about that. So you have to imagine, so I go down to this shop and it's the North Pole of musical instruments, and there's tubas hanging from the rafters and, you know, pianos erupting and, you know, all kinds of interesting things to look and listen to. And, you know, I meet with Steve and he just says, you know, I don't know if anyone's going to be interested in participating. And I said, "Oh, really?" And I said, "Yeah, well, you know, about 10 years ago, a journalist came in and there was an article in the paper about how there was this big backlog and it ended up reflecting poorly on us, even though it wasn't our fault because we were short-staffed, et cetera. And that's why everybody was kind of hesitant and reticent. Will you let me talk to them?" So he got everybody in a semicircle, about, I don't know, maybe 10 or 12 people. And I made my pitch for what kind of film I wanted to make and what the, you know, modus operandi was. And we were here to celebrate the work that they do and tell their stories. And like you said, I don't think you could have written it as a more sort of truthful cross section that sort of brings together all kinds of different people that you get to know if you live in or know Los Angeles well. It just so happened that the four people that raised their hands were just this perfect representation. It was not by design. I mean, not by our design. Maybe someone's design. Maybe their own design. Yeah. I think when a documentary filmmaker stands in front of you and says, "Who has a story to tell?" You either have no feeling at all, or your heart starts pounding because you know, I have one. I have a story to tell. And my guess is if you talk to those people, that's what they were feeling. And that's what forced their hand to rise up in the air. And clearly, you know, that those stories have resonated well beyond any of us ever expected, to the tune of millions of people and the Academy Awards. So, you know, it just goes to show that, you know, everybody has a story, you know, and certainly these people had that, had a story in spades.
Yeah, definitely. I know this was touched on a little earlier, but since the film has come out, can you touch on what the tangible real world impact has been for LAUSD students, staff, teachers, parents? I know that they've recently come out with this $15 million initiative campaign that the district's embarking on in light of the film. If you could touch a little bit about that and anything else that has come out since the film's been released.
Yeah, I think that's definitely the best part of all of this, or one of the best parts of all of this. Just that the more people are watching and talking about the film, the more it's going to, even after this Sunday, point people to this issue and how to support it, and wonder how they could, you know, bring that back in the city that they live in, or whatever else it might do. I think that that's what's really exciting about all this. And so that is what has led to us being invited to school board meetings, and the city of Los Angeles gave each of the repair technicians and the people at the shop a commemorative certificate from the city for the work that they've been doing. And then, like you mentioned, this $15 million campaign, which the reason why that number was arrived to is because this is meant to not only add more staff, but also create internship programs and apprenticeship programs and all these other things. And, you know, it feels so vital that whatever's done, whatever can be done, is done to keep this shop around. And even as we think about a lot of other generosity and benevolence and gifting instruments to students, some of those programs don't consider what happens, or can't consider what happens when the instrument is broken, or if it's received and needs to be repaired and all that. So this is also to make sure that the other side of this whole equation, or one of the factors in this whole equation, is supported and put here forever.
Yeah. And I can just say, from personal experience, last weekend I was just at like a biking event, and you both obviously know LAUSD board member Nick Melvoin, who was speaking at that event, giving opening remarks and, you know, talking about the film and the mission that has now come out about the film and raising that $15 million. So it seems like there's just such a sense of pride, not only with those involved in the film, but the school board members who you guys worked with firsthand in spreading the message of the film to those that they come in contact with as they're out and about at public events.
Love to hear that.
Yeah, yeah, in front of many, many people on a Sunday morning on Melrose Avenue. Well, I just had a couple more questions for you. Can you, I know that, I believe this project was self-financed. Can you share how the partnership came about with Searchlight and Disney and having them come on board and acquire the film?
Yeah. It's actually kind of a touching story that transcends sort of commercial interests or business. So this project, Chris and I funded ourselves for 4 years. And as we got to the end, and especially leading up to filming the big end credits, which was sort of the most resource intensive 5 minutes of the movie, we had two amazing executive producers come on board, Jane Solomon and Peter Rotter, individuals who cared deeply about music and wanted to see this film get made. Peter Rotter actually was the one who introduced Chris and I almost 10 years ago, who just an amazing music contractor here who helped put that whole thing together. And it premiered at the Telluride Film Festival. And while we were there, David Greenbaum, who now heads the entire Walt Disney Studios, but at the time was co-head of Searchlight, saw the film. And his team saw the film. And we had already kind of talked to LA Times about this. And I just email. He was super complimentary of it. It was exciting, and you know, Searchlight Pictures is not necessarily in the short documentary business, but we knew that we wanted a lot of people to see this movie, and we knew that, you know, if we were able to somehow get the film on Disney Plus, that would be amazing. So I just remember, you know, we talked about it and sent a shot in the dark email to David on a Sunday afternoon, and basically was like, look, you know, we're not looking to make any money. We're not looking to sell this or anything. We want to permeate the culture with this and make a difference with our film. And you can help us because your brand is amazing. Everybody knows that if it's Searchlight, you know, they're about to see something special. And Disney Plus is just an incredible platform, and Hulu too, incredible platform that will just reach so many more people. But we want to keep the film on YouTube for free in perpetuity through our partnership with the LA Times. And he agreed. And so what's interesting is so many people, because they see that, they think that, oh, this is some big multi-million-dollar partnership, which is not the case. This has been very much a indie, scrappy, self-funded, I mean, both Chris and I, project. And it's because we all care about it. And we all, as individuals, thought, you know, this is really important, and what can we all bring to the table? Because as yet, you know, short documentaries are not a profitable venture. And right through the campaign has all been everybody chipping in what they can. And so that's how it came together.
Yeah. And it's probably because of that care that Searchlight and Disney shared with you guys, which is why they were okay with having it still live on YouTube in perpetuity to keep the message alive and to raise awareness for the campaign and all the fundraising that's going to be coming out of the release of the film as well. So that's amazing how they were such great partners with you guys in that regard.
They really were. And it's one of those stories where it's just like, you know, this big company was just very human and generous.
Right. And not typically in the short doc game, as you said. And so for this year to make a splash with not just yours, but also another doc short nominated as well with 99 WIPO.
I mean, just, it's great. Yeah. I love to see that.
Yeah. You know? I had one last question for the both of you as we close out. I got to touch on the Oscar nominations. You've both been through this before. How does going through this process over the last few weeks, how's it been different compared to the last time for a concerto? Chris, if we want to go start with you.
Yeah, just the fact that last time was during the pandemic. And so it was a very, very different Oscars, and, you know, much more intimate and smaller. And we definitely couldn't have brought everyone that we're bringing this time. And so the fact that we're able to bring Patty, Dana, Steve, and Dwayne, and Porsche, and Isma, and I, and like our crew, and like everybody that made this, because really Ben and I are just representatives of this whole amazing group of people that made this happen and gave themselves to this for it to happen. And so to be able to share that night with all of them, I think that's the thing that makes this year feel like so exciting and so special. So yeah, it's a big difference between the last time and this
one. Yeah, because the concerto, that was the Union Station Oscars, right?
And like, you know, my grandfather is in his 90s, so the idea of him coming and not really being comfortable in that space, and it just being the two of us because we can't bring anybody else, like, you know, that then affected whether or not I chose to have my grandfather there. And like, that was such a special moment that I wanted to share with him that we just talked it through, and it wouldn't have made sense, you know. And so it's just super different in this way.
Yeah. And you got to do all the other things you couldn't do last time, like the luncheon and the in-person Q&As, which I'm sure were all the more impactful. Ben, switching gears to you, for you specifically, you've achieved this unique feat of 3 nominations in this category in just 4 years. I think it's something that few other people have achieved. So this is quite historic. How has this nomination felt in this journey compared to the last couple of times?
Yeah, it's a crazy thing for me too. I mean, it's like I never expected to have an experience like this, even one time, let alone multiple times. I think the feeling I mean, the first year was definitely disorienting. I mean, I have to say, right? The first time you're involved in the Academy Awards, it's just like, oh my gosh, it's like being in the middle of a tornado. All these things happening and everything is all happening all at the same time, and you hope you're doing it right, etc. It has been a little more calm, you know, which is not necessarily a word I'd use to describe the last 6 weeks, but definitely more calm than maybe the first time around. And I think what I've learned since going through the process in the first time is how to make it best for all the people who this is new for, where this is truly a life-changing situation. I mean, think of these four repair people who have been working in a windowless warehouse for 20 years, or little Porsche, you know, 11 years old, who, you know, a year ago just practicing her violin and just a normal kid, and now she's walking the red carpet, or Ismarai or whatever. So, you know, part of Chris and I's job, yes, it's to enjoy the festivities and whatever, but it's also to be good advocates and hosts to all these wonderful people who worked so hard to make this movie happen, for whom, you know, this may be the one time that they get to go to the Academy Awards. And so as the sort of representative of the film, you become somewhat of a guide, and you want to be a good guide that makes the experience as wonderful and magical and delightful as possible. And so we both have been putting a lot of effort into trying to make that happen, trying to make it not a stressful occasion, but a exciting one, and one where the appreciation of the world and of the Academy can be felt by them, which is why we made the movie in the first place.
Absolutely. Well, thank you both so much. I was so excited going into next Sunday with the film, even more excited now that a fellow Burroughs alum is up for an Oscar and son of a Fairfax alum too. I'm also a Trojan, Ben, so I have a personal connection.
Wow.
We just
have
both
all
of
been
you.
Educated by the
I'm
same.
Just checking off all the boxes between the two of you guys, but no, very excited for the both of you, and best of luck on Sunday.
Thank you so much. Nice to see you, Max.
Thanks so much for tuning in. Please take a moment to subscribe to The Hollywood Podcast for free on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Until next time, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter @Max Geschwind. Thanks for listening.